If you want something, make it happen yourself. And really that is the journey of real estate for me, because if I wanted something, I just had the tenacity to go away and make it happen.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with ex-accountant and property investment extraordinaire, Steve McKnight, who possesses a staggering portfolio of over 500 properties. With previous tenants like Barack Obama, McKnight will tell us about how he got started in property and how if you want something, you need to make it happen yourself. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free.
My name's Steve Knight. I am a professional investor, and I guess my claim to fame is that since May 1999, I've bought hundreds and hundreds of properties. I don't keep a count of how many, but it'd be well over 500. It might be as high as 800. I know it sounds like a big gap, but after a while you stop counting and you lose count. I went from being an unhappy accountant in practice with a business partner at the time, Dave Bradley, and together Dave and I cast a vision to buy enough property to never have to work in our accounting business again. And by age 32, we achieved that goal. And both of us, although we're no longer business partners, have moved on to our respective niches in real estate and continue to profit from it.
So what does he actually do in any given day?
Wow. Well, normally I'll roll out of bed at around 7 o'clock or so. I'll do maybe a half hour of exercise or walking when I pray and give thanks to God for being alive. For that particular day, I'll come home, I'll help the kids get ready to go to school, I'll eat breakfast, I'll sit and read my Bible, and then I'll get in and do some work, usually until lunchtime, and then I'll eat lunch, and then I will get back and do a little bit more work, and then the kids come home from school, so we hang out, and I help them with their homework, or just have a chat, or we do some exercise together, and we eat dinner, and then we hang out after dinner and go to bed. And the next day, repeat chorus. That's pretty much my lifestyle at the moment.
McKnight says his vision for financial freedom is?
I think for me, the vision was financial freedom, which is working when you want, how you want, when you want, and with whom you want. And that was always the dream. I don't think financial freedom is getting on the golf course every day, or if that's what you want to do, good luck to you. For me, it was still contributing, being productive, adding value, helping people, but also being around for my kids, particularly while they're young, and giving them a lifestyle, which I like to say was I want my special growing up to be their normal. So I'm trying to lift the bar a little bit without spoiling them. I mean, my eldest daughter wants a pony, and my wife and I have decided against that. And trying to encourage you to be a bit more responsible.
Thanks to the wealth generated by his hundreds of investment properties, McKnight focuses on giving his children the best childhood he can.
So we're not just giving the kids absolutely anything they want, but we are trying to give them an experience in life that we didn't have, my wife and I didn't have as kids. And hence, that's why we're in the United States for a year. We moved over here, we bought a house here, the kids are going to school here, and it's a great life experience. It's the sort of experience that when I was a kid, we got in a caravan and went to a caravan park. My kids get on an airplane and live in America for a year. And I give thanks to God for that, and it's also what real estate has done over the years to create the wealth to allow us to do it. Well, they're a novelty because of their Aussie accents, but they are finding freedoms here in the US that I get in Australia, because they go to an all-girls school in Australia, whereas here they go to a co-ed school. And life over here is a little more relaxed than the structure in Australia. So they've settled in well. That said, they miss our pets at home and their friends at home, so they're also looking forward to coming home in a couple of months when our one-year adventure comes to an end.
McKnight attributes his impressive success story as a property investor to his combined skills in accounting and business.
How would I describe myself as a property investor? I would say that what I've tried to do is bring the logic and reasoning that you receive as an accountant, professionally trained accountant, into the world of investing. So some investors are speculative in the way they go about selecting areas and real estate and their profit expectations. And I think other investors are strategic, which means that there is some logic and some reasoning and some basis behind what they do. So I would count myself as a professional property investor who uses business principles and accounting reasoning to justify the investments that are bought and the strategy that is adopted to unearth the maximum profit possible.
McKnight grew up in the Australia of kids without helmets, where the streetlights were your core home and there was no such thing as an iPhone. He recalls this time as his happiest years and so strives hard to give his children an even better childhood.
I grew up in eastern suburbs of Melbourne in a place called, or a town called, suburb called Doncaster, which back in the 60s and the 70s was the sort of urban fringe, give or take, of Melbourne. So there was a lot of house and land packages going up in Doncaster Templestowe in the 70s and 80s. I went to school at the local primary school, Doncaster Primary, and they were really happy years. I mean, back in those days, you could ride your bike to school without a helmet, which would be crazy these days. You were able to stay out just so long as you were home before dark. There were no mobile phones. There was no internet. It was kids having fun as kids. And accidents happened, the occasional broken arm from someone who fell off the monkey bars, but life went on.
From happy childhood, McKnight went on to further his education at a prestigious school.
After primary school, I went to a private school in Melbourne, Campbell Grammar. My parents couldn't afford to send me there, but my grandparents could, so they paid for the high school education. After finishing at Campbell Grammar, at Campbell Grammar, I like to borrow a line from Robert Allen. You know, I was in the bottom third that made the top two thirds possible. So I wasn't particularly remarkable at high school. I was overweight. I was the second fattest kid in high school. My nickname was Captain Blubber. So I had some socially awkward moments. And then after high school, I went and did an accounting degree at RMIT in Melbourne. And then third year of that accounting degree was working for a year. It was called a co-op year. So I was lucky in the recession of the early 1990s to get a graduate or slightly undergraduate accounting position, doing tax returns, photocopying, filing, running the boss's dry cleaning into town, picking up his Rolex watch. I appreciate the opportunity, but I thoroughly hated it.
Despite the opportunity of his position, McKnight quickly realised he could not keep up with the debilitating demands of the job.
I used to get to Sunday night and cry about going to work the next day, ironing shirts. It was just horrible. Anyway, that year ended. It was great to have the money, mind you. So I wanted to go back and finish my accounting degree, given that I was 3 years into a four-year degree. I kept working part-time at the accounting place for money. And then I luckily got a job at Deloitte. I thought, well, I just had a bad experience with my first accounting job. Maybe I'll go and work somewhere else. And got a job at Deloitte and really, really loved it. Spent 3 years at Deloitte. Loved the social feel about the place. Loved the camaraderie. The work got a bit boring at the end. But at that time, I studied to become a chartered accountant and burnt out. I was working 10 to 12 hours a day, coming home doing 3 to 4 hours of study, and that was 6 days a week, and Sunday I'd just sleep all day. And after 14, 15 months of that, which was the study to become a chartered accountant, I was just thoroughly emotionally spent. So I had a bit of a career hiatus. I quit my job at Deloitte to try and go back and study physiotherapy at uni. Physiotherapy was always my passion.
Despite his passion for physiotherapy, McKnight was forced to pursue accounting, despite the stress and health issues that it gave him.
I love massage. I love helping people. I kind of feel like I fell into accounting because I couldn't do HSC or VCE English, not English, maths, because of the high school. They didn't want me to mess up their pass rate. So anyway, as a young adult, I tried to get back into physio, didn't get in, got close. That ended my career kind of at Deloitte. I was ready to move on anyway. Spent a while working for ICI, which is now Orica, and then moved on. I'd met my wife at Ayers Rock, and went up to Mackay in North Queensland where she lived to woo her. Got sacked out of that job in North Mackay, big fish in a small pond. I remember it was another accounting job, and I just couldn't bring myself to wear short sleeve shirts and a tie. I felt that was wrong after the pedigree of working at Deloitte, where, you know, you come in a suit and you're well groomed, and then turning up at Mackay where they had kind of ties with that elastic behind it. No one knew how to tie a tie. It was a cultural shock, and I think we didn't integrate well. So in hindsight, they did the right thing in letting me go. But my wife and I moved back to Melbourne, and I got a job working in an accounting firm.
Although from here, McKnight eventually began his own business in accounting. It did not alleviate the stress the profession gave him.
You can see I keep repeating this mistake like a dog returning to its vomit. I got another accounting job working as a manager in a small firm, and I was the audit manager, and the tax manager was a strapping young lad called Dave Bradley. And after working for a while in that accounting practice together, Dave and I looked at each other and said, why don't we start up our own firm? So Dave and I started up our own firm at the beginning of 1999. And after 4 or 5 months of doing that, I said to Dave, Dave, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. I was suffering health-related stress issues. I was good at accounting, but it was destroying my soul. And maybe that's a point for some listeners today, is that if you're stuck in a lifestyle or a job where it's just eating you from the inside out, and in my case, I ended up with ulcers on, we'll call it unusual body parts, and you can try and fill in the gaps. Went to the doctor. He said, look, Steve, you've just got stress-related illness. You have to change. Otherwise, you're going to die early. And I had to make a lifestyle adjustment.
Even though there were bumps and turns in McKnight's property investment journey, he feels that everything happened as it should to get him to the place of his prosperity today.
I was pretty devastated after being sacked from the job in Mackay. When you get sacked somewhere, it takes your self-esteem down a couple of notches, and it took me a few years to recover from that. But with the benefit of hindsight, as I said, I think they did the right thing and they did me a favour, because I wouldn't be where I am today if they hadn't have done it.
Growing up, McKnight witnessed his father's dabbling in real estate and the stock market. However, his ambition for property is clearly his own.
Dad sold used trucks, and Mum taught piano after school for some extra housekeeping money, but otherwise she was the principal sort of homemaker. Dad, later in his career, as he was coming towards the end of it, dabbled in some property investing, pretty speculative. He had a client who bought a lot of trucks from him, and together they purchased an industrial site, and he quite literally bet the house on it. He mortgaged up the house to get the investing capital to buy it. And just before they were going to start operations, one of the large national tenants, competing tenants, told them, if you ever lease out this building, we're going to send you broke. And they had to make a call about whether they were going to do it or kind of fold. And they had testicles the size of bowling balls, because they went ahead and did it, and it worked out.
With the lucky touch in real estate, McKnight had a good mentor in his father. Unfortunately, this didn't extend to the stock market.
So that was the beginning of Dad's real estate career, and he's since bought a couple of negatively geared properties that have appreciated well in value. He also dabbles in the stock market, but I have a saying that anything Dad buys, everyone else should sell, because he has the anti-Midas touch on the stock market. The advice goes down in value. So he probably should have stuck to real estate, where he's done quite well. Dad's parents were not particularly wealthy growing up, whereas Mum's parents were more wealthy. And so Mum and Dad
have clashed regularly over their marriage, and they've been married 52 years now, I believe, but they've clashed regularly in their marriage over money issues.
McKnight attributes his choice to become an accountant to a childhood-created desire to help his parents with money issues.
I kind of believe that's why I ended up being an accountant, was to try and, on the third child, be the peacekeeper in the family and try and help mum and dad sort out their money woes. But anyway, life has ended up well for mum and dad. They're both independently wealthy now. Mum through inheritance, dad through his own self-made means and a little bit of inheritance as well. And they're fine. They're well looked after. They're self-funded retirees.
That's great.
As far as my own real estate career goes, I think the lessons that dad taught me were that if you work hard, that you can achieve great things. Mum and dad were both very independent people. If I wanted to do something as a kid growing up, it was up to me to make it happen.
The child of two very independent people, McKnight also learned to become a self-sufficient individual.
So if I wanted to play basketball, I had to catch a bus to the basketball stadium and organise myself. So while it was disappointing in some ways that mum and dad didn't show a great interest in what I did, the lesson that taught was if you want something, make it happen yourself. And really that is the journey of real estate for me, because if I wanted something, I just had the tenacity to go away and make it happen. And today people often say about me that they don't think that I'm brilliant, and I don't think I am either, but what I have is a doggedness to continue to push ahead even in difficult circumstances. And maybe that was forged in those early years growing up.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear about McKnight's initial plan to use his investment portfolio as a way to leave accounting forever.
How many of these would we have to buy to not have to work in accounting anymore? And it was...
We'll also hear about the horrific property that taught McKnight his biggest lesson.
Just as I felt something crawl up my leg, it dawned on me what was going on.
As well as what McKnight is excited about for the future.
Excited about getting old with my wife and excited about continuing to invest and make money and to use that money to bless my family.
Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. McKnight's first foray into property investment was due to the health issues of stress-filled job as an accountant. His investment career soon became a high-wealth job without the intense stress.
So I went to Dave and I said, Dave, I know that we're new business partners together, but I can't do this anymore. Let's try and do something else. And we went to a Robert Kiyosaki seminar after reading his book. And then in May 1999, Dave and I got in the car and we drove up to Ballarat and we bought our first positively geared investment property. And then we soon after sat down and said, all right, we've bought one. How many of these would we have to buy to not have to work in accounting anymore? And it was 150, or I can't remember the number, but it was a large number of houses. And we said, all right, well, let's do it. And one by one by one, Dave and I used the money in the accounting practice. He would continue to work in the accounting practice in the early days, and I would use the money to invest in real estate. And then as time went on, Dave gradually phased out the accounting practice so that we both ended up being full-time real estate investors. That's the journey.
McKnight's worst investing moment didn't involve him losing money or even properties, but it did involve a horror story encountered straight from your nightmares.
I mean, there's been some horrible stories, don't get me wrong, but I think out of those experiences, you learn a lot. And so there hasn't ever been a moment in my real estate career where I've really felt compromised. And I think that's because as an accountant, I'm naturally risk averse and try to avoid betting the bank on a single deal or take unnecessary risks. That said, in the early investing years of Dave and my careers, we did buy a property that we decided to renovate ourselves. And with due respect to Dave and with due respect to myself, we were good accountants and we were emerging property investors, but we were terrible renovators. It was actually the only deal that I've ever done with a family member as well. We brought that in on it who had retired.
Without the right knowledge or experience, renovating a property can be time-consuming and unprofitable, which is what McKnight discovered.
My dad was quite handy, and it just we didn't lose money, but we didn't make a lot of money. And the learning lesson there was the amount of deals we missed because our heads were in paint tins rather than out there looking for the next opportunity versus the labor saving by doing the work ourselves was just ridiculous. So I think the lesson there was do what you're really good at doing and leave the rest for those that are good at doing things that you're not. A story of a property over here in the US, which might freak a few people out, was back in 2009 or 2010, I was looking at buying a fiveplex, and it was a real estate foreclosure. And funnily enough, Mike Comer, another Mike, was taking me through the property, and he knocked on the door and the tenant opened it up, and immediately there was this foul smell that kind of hit me in the face like a punch. And I was trying to figure out what was going on. Anyway.
Despite the warning signs of his agent, McKnight forged ahead to assess the property. But boy, was he in for a surprise.
Mike kind of stepped back and ushered me in. So anytime a real estate agent does that, sort of lets you go in and they stay outside, you know you're in for a shock. Anyway, as I walked in, I was trying to find where the smell came from. It really was. Pugnant doesn't do it justice. Putrid is more like it. And I was looking around and I saw a whole lot of cats. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then as I looked around, I saw the kitty litter tray that was full of cat poo to overflowing. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's probably the smell. And then as I looked around, I kind of looked at the kitty litter box and it seemed to be moving. I was like, what? This is odd. And the tenant's talking to me about the property and I'm trying to listen and I'm also trying to figure out why is the kitty litter moving? And then as I looked at the kitty litter, I looked at the wall behind it and it seemed to be moving. And as I looked around, the ceiling seemed to be moving and the floor seemed, I was like, am I coming down with a migraine or what's going on? This is all odd. And then just as I felt something crawl up my leg, it dawned on me what was going on.
Nothing could have prepared McKnight for the horrific scene before him.
The place was so infested with cockroaches, little mini cockroaches, that they were all over the walls and all over the kitty litter and all over the ceiling and all over the floor, and they'd started crawling up my legs. And I was kind of thinking, oh. And then just as I realized this, everything kind of clicked into place. The tenant says, yeah, as you can see, we've got a cockroach problem here. I've been in hospital twice. They've crawled into my ear canal in the nighttime and I've had to go to hospital to get them taken out. Well, I guess I'm the guy who likes to buy problems and turn them into solutions. So
sometimes you meet people that are just determined to succeed, regardless of the challenge. And McKnight was definitely determined to turn a profit on this house of horrors.
Despite the cockroach problem, we bought the property. We did move the tenant out. It's kind of not appropriate to have 10 cats in a little one-bedroom bedsitter. So we moved her out and we had to put a big tent over the whole property and gas it. Anyway, we still couldn't afterwards get the smell out of that unit, even though the cats weren't there anymore and the kitty litter wasn't there and the tenant wasn't there anymore. And so we had to peel off the plaster in the walls and we took out 10, 50-gallon drums of dead cockroaches, dead little mini cockroaches, shoveled them into the... Oh, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Cleaning up the property. did it. He had to take out, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of these little cockroaches that had infested the place and got behind the wall. And then we gradually turned it around. And about a year or so ago, I sold that property and made a good capital gain. But it was a bit of a problem.
However, the horror is balanced by the high class, where one property has cats and roaches, another hosts an American president.
Well, okay, another story out of the US. I mean, most of my investing has been in the US since 2009, when I cashed out of Australia and brought my money over to the US because house prices over here were so ridiculously cheap. The returns were so high. The dollar was high, and I foresaw an opportunity. But I've been buying some stuff back in Australia recently too. The story that comes to mind here is that I bought another property in foreclosure downtown Fort Myers, Florida, and there was a bit of a problem with it in that the bank owned it, but it was a double story building and there was a staircase out the back. And we said to them, look, we'll either replace the staircase and you give us a $5,000 discount on the price, or you replace the staircase and we'll pay the price, the asking price. And they said, no, we'll go ahead and we'll change over the staircase at the back. I thought, oh, okay, no worries. Anyway, I think it ended up costing them $30,000, which was quite a lot of money because the whole property was only $80,000. And then be that as it may, the remarkable thing about that building is that Obama then leased it for his campaign headquarters for Southwest Florida here. So I've had Barack Obama, the ex-president of the United States of America, as one of my tenants.
Another key to McKnight's stellar portfolio is his ability to stay ahead of the curve, thanks to his knowledge and the help of his friends such as Dave Bradley and Aaron Dunlop. But for McKnight, his true aha moment was realizing he could stand on his own two feet.
I've been very fortunate that one of the skills that I've got is being able to reasonably accurately predict changes in market momentum. So ahead of the curve in Ballarat, ahead of the curve in New Zealand, ahead of the curve in the United States. Now that's only by the grace of God. I don't have any soothsaying ability or anything else like that.
This good fortune continued for McKnight and even reached over to the United States.
It's just I've seen the same opportunity present itself a number of different times. I would think that the best thing that ever happened to me in my investing career solo, so after Dave and I shook hands and moved on to our own respective niches, was the decision to come to the United States of America and invest here. It was 2009 and it was carnage real estate over here, but I managed to buy a couple of hundred houses, some by myself, some with another investing partner, Aaron Dunlop, Mobile Home Parks. And what's happened is that the strategy played out. And it's always nice to see a strategy play out. You think it'll work, but when it does work, it kind of feels self-fulfilling.
McKnight's American success gave him the confidence to further build his property empire.
So the money that's been made over here in the US has been good, but that aside, it's watching a strategy play out and then realizing that, yeah, you can do this. And, a middle-class guy from Melbourne, ex-accountant, sacked of a job in Mackay, second fattest kid in high school, with all the doubts and fears and insecurities that we all have, when a plan comes together, to quote the A-Team, it's great. And my aha moment was I knew I could do it with Dave. Could I do it by myself? And coming over here and investing in the United States proved I could. And that was an aha moment. So given that I had proved that I could do it by myself, or as I like to say, with God as my business partner, that then gave me a confidence and allowed me to go to a higher level with my investing than where I had been before.
More than anything, McKnight is excited by the thrill of the chase and expanding his already extraordinary property portfolio.
What am I most excited about in terms of investing in real estate? Well, if we're talking about real estate, I'm not sure I get excited. To me, it's a business transaction. It is, there's emotion, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love sniffing out a deal. I put a property under contract last week, $2 million for the fund that I run here in the United States, and I think that property will do well. And since managing to secure it, it was me and another guy that were head-to-head trying to get it under contract. They bid a bit more, but I had a better track record of closing and was a cash buyer. So they went with me, and the agent said, well, since giving you the nod, we've had about 30 calls from other people who want it too. And that is it feels good. You know, that's exciting because you know that you've got a good deal when that kind of thing happens.
But material success is obviously not all that matters. A family man through and through, McKnight is also excited to grow old with his wife and kids surrounding him.
I'm just excited about the future, I guess. If I'm excited about anything, I'm excited about watching my kids grow up, excited about getting old with my wife, and excited about continuing to invest and make money and to use that money to bless my family and to bless other people. And till God calls me home, to continue to try and not only, because I think I've got enough myself, but not only to provide for myself, but to provide for others. I think there's an obligation that to whom much is given, much is required. And monetary wealth brings with it advantages, there's no doubt about it, but it also brings with it a responsibility. And you have to be careful about how you discharge that responsibility. I want to get to heaven and I want God to look at me and say, well done, good and faithful servant. So I heard someone say recently that money is a tool and not a weapon, and I think that's a really good way of describing it. And I think I want to continue to use money as a tool to benefit myself and to benefit others.
Thanks so much to Steve. We'll keep the conversation going in a future episode on Property Investory Podcast, where we talk about how to apply the strategy.
Dave would source them and buy them, and that was how we moved out of vendor finance and into traditional rentals. And so we would employ this principle called multiplication by division, where we would buy a house for 50, keep the numbers simple, it would go up to 100, we'd sell it at 100 and buy back two $50,000 houses in another emerging area. And that's how we bought so much property so quickly.
To exploring the mindset needed to pull off a successful investment.
And so in order to take on risks, I had to find a way of replacing that portion of my brain that would allow that to happen. And it's very hard to find a way to overcome risk. And in any transaction, there's risk.
To resources he recommends.
At that Robert Kiyosaki seminar, I can't remember much, but I can remember a New South Wales real estate agent getting up and saying, I don't understand why people negatively gear when you can positively gear. Look.
And that's next time on Property Investory Podcast. To get the full transcript and see the show notes, visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Thanks for listening.